Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast. Around 18 months ago, I had the pleasure of speaking with two inspirational educators from St. Joseph's Institution International School in Singapore, Russell Bennett and Steve Phantom, about their work in developing a coaching culture within their school community. It was a fascinating conversation that explored how coaching first took root at SJI, the structures they had put in place, and their vision for the future. Today, we're revisiting that conversation to discover what has happened since. How has coaching evolved? What lessons have been learned? What challenges remain? And what exciting possibilities still lie ahead? Russell and Steve, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks very much. Great to be here again.
Hi, Richard. How are you doing?
It's good to have you. Gentlemen, it is genuinely a pleasure to be chatting with you both again. Now, before we dive into the specifics, and we will get into the nitty-gritty, when you reflect on last year or last year and a half, what feels most significant to you about the journey of coaching at SJI?
I remember towards the end of the last time that we spoke 18 months ago, we said that, so we were hoping one day to have a coaching department, but we didn't know when or how. And you said, you think it will happen sooner than we realize. It's like, it didn't feel like it at that time. Well, in the last several months, we've had approval to have not quite a coaching department in name, but we've a significant amount of money and resources has been put aside for us spreading over a few years. So that is the big change. It's, yeah, maybe you helped make it happen. You casted it into being.
Claim a wee tiny bit in there.
Yeah, my great surprise in the last 18 months, Richard, that we've managed to also get three roles inside of there where we are given time in the week, non-contact teaching time, to just deliver the admin and the development and the expansion of the coaching department, as it were. So that's been implemented as well.
As far as challenges go, anything in there in the last wee while?
Challenges, yeah. I suppose having the number of coaches in the school, it goes up and down every year. It's completely unpredictable. And just this year happens to be lower than we had anticipated. Last year, we were concerned that we didn't have enough coaching slots for people to become coaches. Whereas this year, we thought, okay, we've got more. We've had slightly fewer. So it's... it's getting that balance of providing the resource and also motivating, inspiring, finding people who actually, yeah, I want to do this.
Biggest encouragement?
Yeah, then the Salian training program has greater clarity. It is a growing part of the school. It's a form of in-house teacher training for the brothers. That's actually expanded slightly beyond brothers as well, with the teaching brothers in the school. And we've now got systems being set up such we're going to have two coachee slots per year are going to be for that. So they'll go through a year of mentoring first. And then as they're getting more confident, moving into their increasing their expertise, then they move on to coaching. So that's actually, it's aligned with our school values. It's aligned with our coaching values. Yeah, it's encouraging.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. Is there anything that now feels normal that once felt as aspirational in any ways?
I think there's an expanding culture of that coaching is just normal at our school. It's just around and about and in the walls and in the staff room, and it's just omnipresent more that we are a coaching school. Yeah. Oh, you're one of the coaches. Oh, you do coaching. It's not a surprise anymore at our school. We've got a bit of a reputation, I suppose, now, Russell.
We have two incoming members of staff who start in July, and they both want to be involved in coaching. Now, one of them has been a part of the school in the past and went for a few years and has come back, so they were part of the coaching team. But another is coming here, and they've heard about coaching in the school, and I happens to pass them out in a shop a few months ago and saying, oh, I've applied. I really want to get involved with the coaching. It's like, Whoa. Okay. Great. So it's when things come at you from beyond the school's setting, it's really encouraging and really, it makes it feel that some inspiration has been spreading out from the work that we're doing here, which is a relief, actually.
Yes. Yes, I can imagine. I can imagine it is. It's interesting, Steve. You talk about it. You know, it's in the walls as part of who we are, and Russell, you're talking about it's actually outside of the walls as well. You know, when you're outside physically the school building, which is genuinely really encouraging. In our previous episode, we spoke about in many ways a lot of structures, you know, and programs and those initial stages. But I'm curious about this, I suppose, this whole concept of culture. So what sort of conversations, you know, what behaviors or habits are you guys noticing, you know, across the school that really tell you that coaching is becoming embedded?
I think one of the yeah, it's quite a clear line for me, this one. It's, professional learning community is a Monday afternoon meeting slot where colleagues sign up and they develop an area of professional practice. So it's completely voluntary. You have to attend something or deliver something yourself. And Lavan, who's one of our lead coaches, and I decided we'd create a coach. Well, it's called the Leader Within, actually, but it's a coach approach towards leadership. And we've had 8 or 9 people. And culturally, it's important because there are folk who have attended the meeting who aren't naturally coach inclined. Some of them are kind of coach skeptic. And they've come in and they've seen some shifts in themselves and the way they approach their leadership style. And you can really sense in them that they're going to take it back into their departments and therefore develop the culture even further. We've got 3 or 4 more sessions to go, but we hope to repeat it next year and then maybe build on it even further. But it's outside of the professional coaching program, but still part of the coaching delivery.
Russell, any thoughts?
Well, one thing to add to that, it's also pleasing that there's people who want to do this and it's taking part, because we were told a few years ago by principal, I'm hearing good things about coaching for the people who do coaching, but I'd really like it to impact people beyond the coaching program. So this would be an example that Stephen Lovin have developed in the school that is doing that. And because of the role lots of middle leaders were on that course, the cascade effect to filter down to the students ultimately is greater. So it's kind of, there's like lots of multi wins there in one program that they've developed, which is great.
Yeah, and we've been approached by the middle leaders in the pastoral team to deliver one-off bespoke ideas for a pastoral issue in grade 8. Let's say it's a social media challenge, or it's a peer issue or something. And so we've developed a few mini programs and assemblies for the students, for them to practice some coaching skills and see if we can develop their self-awareness and take those guys forward. But it sits inside the culture of the school too.
There's also been an input earlier this year from the CEO, so the new chief executive officer of the school, who's a former principal from another school here in Singapore. And the school is now in 6 domains, it's like a preschool, elementary, high school, admin. I can't remember what the other 2 are, IT, I think. And so he has expressed it's important to try and get all those different parts working as optimally together as possible, and that they see that coaching could play a role in that. What that will look like, how, when, don't know, early days on that one. But in terms of collaboration in the school, I see part of the glue of the school that coaching can contribute to.
Yeah, and to extend what Russell's saying, that the CEO is looking at leadership development programs being brought in by external providers. And hopefully you'll have this same kind of language, as coaching language, running from the CEO to the leaders of the 6 domain all the way down to the grade 7s on a Wednesday morning pastoral session.
Fantastic. Okay, so listen, let's think about your understanding of coaching. And I'm interested to hear, you know, whether that has evolved. You guys have had several years. Well, you've had 18 months since the last time you spoke, on top of all the time you've had leading and living this work. So has your own understanding of coaching evolved or maybe deepened in any way?
In terms of how it operates in the school for the training of the coaches, this is nothing to do with the coaching meetings with coaches. Seeing how to build the other coaches through how we interrupt, how we guide during our own internal training meetings, I think that has been a process that really builds confidence in the coaches, because there's always a range. People have to always get past the syndrome of feeling as though they shouldn't really be there doing coaching, an imposter syndrome. And actually just takes time, and not just doing coaching, but having our training meetings and then people noticing what's worked well, what's landing. And we always have a harvesting of the different sections in our training taking place. And people say, oh, I thought it was coming across like this. And someone says, no, actually, I was there. I was feeling it. And it says, and then person's like, the penny could drop, like, huh. So they can just let go of wanting to do well or look good, feel that they're doing the right thing, and just trust in the process. And it's getting that switch and finding ways to build that confidence in people. I think that is a big learning over the years.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing from Russell's here is beginner's mind. You know, we go to these training sessions and people look at Russell and I and say, oh, these guys know what they're talking about. And as I've become more experienced as a coach, it's definitely, I am more and more of a beginner every time I coach. And I got my PCC last year, and that was a real eye-opener for me. It's definitely a less is more. And spending time doing the training, cultivating a culture of coaching, working with people like Russell and Lavin and the other guys, it's less is more. So when we do go into the training, our other colleagues know that it's okay to have the beginner's mind. And every time we go into space, we're just opening up for somebody to play and explore themselves and become a better version of themselves. And maybe we didn't do that as much earlier on. Maybe it was a bit more structural. I don't know.
I think certainly for myself, my confidence at bringing out the best and the confidence in the other coaches was lower. And so, yeah, I think leaning on, we've got the structure, we're going to follow this process and that will be our meeting. And then over time, I've learned to just dance in the moment with the training and to find the learning that is there to be found by all the people, by all the coaches, not say, here's my learning objectives. They must have leave today's meeting with A, B, C, and D. Actually, they might leave with D, H, K, Z, and Y. And that's fine. And then another week, they'll leave with B, C, P, Q, and S. I'm running out of letters here. Help, Steve.
Omega.
Omega. There we go.
In fact,
the alpha and the omega. Got it.
More often than not, we have folk just bring something in who, you know, let's call them a new coach, but they just bring something in and you go, oh yeah, I've not thought about that, or two, I've forgotten about it, or three, that's completely changed the direction of the coach training.
With that example, people bringing stuff in, we've had some of the psychology teachers in the school have been coaches for a number of years, and we've had one of the school counselors as well. And they bring a massive skill sets. And so they can come into the first meeting and just add a richness and texture and perspective.
Yeah. It's sales to bring a way of being, Richard. They don't just bring their skill in. We have one particular colleague who comes in and you can tell that person's in the room.
Okay, so one phrase that came up in our planning conversation was the importance of keeping the coaching program agile and relevant. So how do you stop coaching from becoming formulaic or stale in very much a maturing coaching culture?
I think what Russell and I have always planned to do from the very beginning was to make sure that coaching serves our school. That's his primary objective, serve the school. and everybody inside of it. And so what we orchestrated, I suppose, from the when we were applying the training of our colleagues so that the school got the most benefit from the coach, was to take the temperature of the school, take the temperature of the room, what's going on in the school, where are we in the exam cycle, what's happening pastorally, has there been a major crisis in the school, is there something happening outside of our control, and how can the coaching of our colleagues serve that and therefore serve the students. And I think that's been really successful. Particularly COVID was a big example. Particularly if we lose one of our students through a tragedy, and how we help our colleagues with our colleagues prepare for that. An example of COVID is, so COVID obviously kicked in and we didn't want to stop the coaching program. So we decided, okay, let's all learn to coach online because none of us had done the online teaching or coaching. And so we spent some time learning how to do that so we could continue coaching our colleagues during the COVID crisis. So that's an example of agility, but also keeping up with trends with ICF, with EMCC, with the core competencies and the ethics. For example, they've just been republished. So making sure that we're making our colleagues aware, our coaching colleagues aware of those changes, and how that we're in orchestra with the rest of the coaching community outside of education. So we're kind of singing from the same hymn sheet.
There's lots of great examples there, which are kind of big picture, whole school. I was just thinking of inside coaching meetings, the very model that we use with CTI, the Coaches Training Institute, their coactive model really emphasizes the importance of intuition, dancing in this moment, and trusting that the coachee is naturally creative, resourceful, and whole. And we're trained to be agile in our coaching sessions itself. And I've noticed that some models have a very specific order. Do this, do this, do this, do this. Then do this, do this, do this, do this. And our model does, it kind of has three different areas you move into, and you're meant to move between them depending on what your intuition is telling you is needed in this moment. So there's agility in meetings is inherent in what we do.
Yeah, and so just reminded me when you said that, Russell, something else we decided would be beneficial. We have two cycles of contract, Richard, and some folks start in the July. We're on a Southern Hemisphere academic year. And so we thought we would be agile by offering our colleagues starting in July a coaching, professional coaching program cycle as well. Obviously, that has issues with overlap and change of year, but we felt it was beneficial for some of our new colleagues coming in who might need some coaching. They've just come to Singapore. They've just started an international education. Coaching's a perfect opportunity for them to feel at home, feel welcomed, and obviously to start their time at SJ International in a positive way. So we pivoted into that as well.
I think that's going to be really helpful for listeners. That agility is in many ways a strength of the coaching culture that you have within your school. You know, it's not something that you're trying to achieve. It's something that I think coaching brings to the school. And I think you guys are a fantastic example of that. There's one thing I'd love to jump into. One of the developments I found particularly interesting was the acceptance of your proposal to change aspects of the funding formula in order to, we've mentioned this already, create protected time coaching and professional learning. So could you unpack that journey for our listeners a little bit?
Well, we have been blessed, and there's a number of different factors involved here, some of which is based upon our being a LaSallian school. It's owned by LaSallian Brothers, and they have, I think, probably bigger pots of money that you can just randomly draw into. So seeding things, getting things started is easier here, so that's helpful. However, the real thing was, when things got started, was the one of the vice principals who did all the timetabling did amazing wizardry in creating timing for people to do the coaching without it adding extra cost to the school at that stage. So for example, let's suppose the school has got 26 teachers and it needs 26.3 teachers in order to fulfill all the science classes. There's 0.3 left over. Now, that's a sunken cost. The school has already paid, already hired those teachers, is paying their salary, and yet you've got that extra time, which in effect is unutilized for science. So she would do is she would give me two lessons and later it was three lessons in my timetable. And so we have like a two-week cycle. So let's say there's 18 lessons a week, so 36 over a fortnight. I'd get 33 out of 36 lessons is my full teaching load, as opposed to 36 out of 36. So I was given the time. And then that has spread across different departments as we've got more people trained up. It has not been ideal. I don't want to put forward, we keep getting a solution to everything. We just can work with what we've got and work hard to make things work. So for example, with music's got just fewer teachers in the school for that, it's not always possible for Steve to get the allocation of lessons per week as we would like. So we're a school first, so we have to operate within that those constrictions. But that was one way of getting the funding going. And what was great about that was that I think that created the time for us to, we weren't under pressure, get results quickly, because it was already a sunken cost that we were making use of, as opposed to extra funding that was being given to us.
And can I just jump in there to something that just came up? And it links back to culture. And because this has become part of it, it's got momentum inside of it. My colleagues in music really want to accommodate the coaching because they feel it's so culturally important to the school. So it's not a secondary conversation when we're having a departmental discussion about timetabling in the following year. Steve, you must get your coaching in. They find it. And so initially like a logistics paper exercise to make sure we get coaching has become a cultural exercise to make sure that it's actually happening, because they understand the impact has been so great.
Fantastic. I'd love to jump in a bit more depth, because there'll be people listening right now, Steve and Russell, and they're thinking about the time, they're thinking about protecting that, and there'll be lots of nodding of heads, and that's really important. So people are right with you. But I'd love to jump into genuinely the practicalities of what coaching actually costs. And this is where, in many ways, you know, Russell, you've done a lot of work around what you call the true cost of coaching. So, you know, just tell us your thoughts, and this is fascinating. Tell us your thoughts, the true cost of coaching.
This is something that I think really everyone who wants to introduce coaching into a school and understand how to understand the costings, they really need to be aware of this. It was all started with a chance conversation with my wife. She works in a big MNC and there is coaching in her organization. And I was asking her about it. So why does your organization still carry on doing this? And she said, well, at the end of the day, someone somewhere must have noticed that it affects the bottom line, because if it was a net cost, it wouldn't have lasted. It would be gone.
Yeah.
I was like, huh. So actually it saves money. It creates money. So I thought, how can I test that for our school? So I sat down one afternoon where I just happened to not have any lessons, and I got at this spreadsheet and I thought, if I was to cost coaching, what would I do? So the short version is I worked out what the hourly cost is per coach and coachee and different levels of leadership in the school. I then looked at the amount of money that was spent on recruiting new teachers and just estimated costs, and worked out along with the help eventually of the head of finance, who gave me all the actual figures that are spent, that it was costing, I've forgotten back then, so I think it's like $15,000-$16,000 per hire that was eventually made. And that was kind of an all-in cost. And then I thought, well, how much are we spending on sending coaches on coach training? And then I just quickly just deducted the two and found that it was essentially breaking even, provided that there was at least one person per year was re-signing their contract at school, and we're under 2-year contracts, re-signing their contract because of coaching. And we have a coaching survey, and we added that in, and actually, that's what we got back. There were one person, two people, even three 1 year, were saying that they were coming back, they're re-signing their contract because of coaching. And if you have one person, then basically more or less breaks even. If you have the second person, I think the school makes something like $15,000 net profits. They actually save more money than they would spend on coaching. And if there's three, it's like over like 25,000. So what started off was trying to find out what's the true cost of coaching. It actually became what's the true cost of not having a coaching program. And that's why I think people should know it saves you money in the long term. It's an unexpected result that I think is so important.
And of course, oodles of time, because the time taken to recruit somebody, the interview process, we'll fly off to Search Associates and we'll go to London or whatever, and then we'll come back and then we'll do the interviews and we've got to shut all of that. It takes a lot of time with a lot of stakeholders at school. You don't have to bother doing that.
I think that's just so helpful for folks possibly to think about for the first time coming at it from that angle. And I know, Russell, you said about, you know, sharing that, you know, that spreadsheet, and we can make that available if other folks want to try.
I'd always be happy to.
Yeah, see how it works out for them. Because yes, it's going to be slightly different. It's going to be context specific, but just to give people that nudge to think about it in that way, that's looking at it from a totally different angle, through a totally different lens, I think will genuinely be very, very helpful and encourage a lot of our listeners. And you're right, Steve. I mean, just the time factor as well as the cost. You know, the hassle of going through the HR process takes time, and that there's a cost to that as well. So those things all factor together, you know, against the cost of coaching. And I love, Russell, that question, you know, what's the cost of not introducing coaching and establishing? That's a lovely question for any senior leadership team to ask themselves. So if we're on the I suppose the area of roles and getting people into roles and so on and so forth, let's think about the creation of specific coaching roles, because I know another significant development for you guys has been the creation of distinct coaching related roles within your school. Could you talk us through, I suppose, those roles and why creating that element of structure really matters?
Russell and I had done it for so long that we'd kind of shared out all of these jobs basically in our own time, during holidays and, I don't know, oodle, but so many times. So we decided it's going to be like four areas, three areas ostensibly. The first area is somebody's in charge of training and delivering training. Every 3 weeks, we try and get everybody together to train coactively. And it's planned. And it should be planned with the heartbeat of the school in mind, like what's happening in the school, what do we need to do, plus any skills we want to review, look at, or anything that somebody could bring if they've just been to coactive and there's been some updates in the training. And obviously we reach out to those folk who've just gone to that coaching and see if they want to introduce something. That's the training kind of branch. The second branch is we call it broadcasting, don't we? It's marketing, sales, selling coaching inside the school and outside the school. And that's been my role this year. That's anything from I'm helping build a coaching area on the school's website, to creating promotional videos, to standing up in front of colleagues and explaining what coaching is, or inviting them to an induction session, to saying we've got Coach Up 9 coming up, folks, going down to the latest series of workshops next weekend. And then you've got the third official round, which is C4. And C4 is part of our C4 suite, which is our coach approach suite, which is an extension of the professional coaching program. Because not everybody, anyone down this, wants to be going through the coaching process, but we would like it that coaching impacts as many people from the school, obviously including children, admissions, marketing, non-teachers and teachers with the coaching skills that we have as collective trained teachers. So it's trying to build a suite of, I suppose, program of ideas that we can take across the school.
So part of the C4, the coaching for education, is Steve's recognizing not everyone wants to do coaching, but actually there's some people do want to do coaching, but they don't want to do the 10 meeting commitments of our professional coaching program, what we call the PCP. So on this, and I can understand that, that's fair enough. However, there's other ways which we can harness the coaching skills that the school has been accumulating to benefit the school in all sorts of other ways. The C4PD, Coaching for Professional Development, was the first way, which I believe that Steve talked about in our previous podcast with you. And it was just a short, people basically commit 90 minutes of their time, spread over 5 meetings, before you go on PD, after, then 3 benchmark meetings afterwards to see that they're putting into practice what they wanted to bring into their practice from their coach training that they went on. And it just works. It just works well. It just makes sense from the amount of money that school spends on sending people on PD. So the C for Edu is just coming up with other shorter commitment programs that the staff can benefit from, essentially.
Yeah, we've got C for leavers, C for new for starters, C for tutees. And they're just little pilot projects at the moment. We think it's a really good use of the cost of sending us on collective training as well. We're trying to maximize the investment that the school's made.
Yeah. It's just, you can see it permeating all the different aspects of school life. You know, you're capitalizing on all of those opportunities, which is going to be helpful for folks who are listening. Let me jump into the whole area, folks, of LaSallian accompaniment and coaching. Obviously, you're a LaSallian school. So something that really stood out in our prep conversation was that connection, which you guys were very helpfully, you know, explained to me between the LaSallian companion model and coaching. So for our listeners who in many cases will be unfamiliar with that sort of vocabulary, that language, could you explain a wee bit around what LaSallian accompaniment is and why it aligns so naturally with the coaching approach?
So the schools is owned by the Christian Brothers. And they are an order of teaching brothers. So lots of them teach history, often the humanities subjects, religious and moral education. And they get some training on their instructional practices in school. However, they also, within their own order of brothers, they are paired with someone who's more experienced, a mentor brother, if you like, who's been maybe doing it for 10, 20 years, longer than them. It's called accompaniment. And it is really for developing the brothers beyond their teaching, developing them spiritually, but also with what they're doing in the school as well. And there was one time I was just happened to be passing a door and out came one of the brothers, this young, dynamic brother, all the students love him. And he just came out and just had this beaming face. He says, "Russell, I just wanted to say to you, I just think coaching is great. It's just, it's so wonderful." It's quite gushing about it. So I says, "Oh, great. So what is it that you particularly like about it?" And he paused for a moment and said, "It's the most LaSallian thing in our school, most LaSallian part of our school," which floored me. I'd never considered it in those terms. And I said, "What do you mean? How so?" And so he explained what accompaniment was. He explained how there should be an investment in teachers. And that goes back like 300 years within the Christian Brothers that they do that. And I just suddenly realized then that's what we should be contributing to. We should be making coaching slots available for the brothers to be trained. And now a couple of years later, we've got it all set up and happening. So it's like a give back to the school.
Okay, so you guys also mentioned the possibility of becoming a flagship coaching school. And I think this is a terrific idea that supports essentially other schools on their journey. What would need to happen for that vision to become a reality?
But we've had so many blessings in our coaching journey here in the school, one of which is having three principals in a row have been incredibly supportive. When the most recent principal came in, one of the earliest things that he said to me in the opening week was, I've heard great things about coaching. I want to develop it further. What do you need? I said, right, okay. That was it was a great place, great starting point. And what I think it needs is a bigger kind of vision and direction that is aligned with the schools and aligned with brothers, aligned with what we've been doing in coaching. His basic idea was, see, one day we could be a, like, as you say, a beacon school. What if we were the school that was here in Singapore, in Asia, best known for coaching? What would be needed to help make that happen? And for me, it has always been a process of first quality and quantity. And from sticking to that, as I suppose in some ways it's a bit safer. We're not trying too much in one go, not biting off more than we can chew. But I do think that we are ready to go from a quality to a quantity stage. And having a principal who was saying, yeah, what do we need to make it a coaching school is a big step in that direction. Maybe Steve can also jump in with some of the things that's needed for that.
Yeah,
I was thinking that the internal training, we did that from the very beginning. Once every three to four weeks, teaching weeks, we have training for staff. Now, sometimes because of timetabling reasons and CCAs and whatever, not all people can make that all that time. However, we've kept it going throughout. We've facilitated 110, 120 internal coaching meetings so far. And I think that gives confidence, allows a safe space for people to muck up, fail, learn, fall forward. And I think that's essential. I think having the timetabling wizardry has been great. Having the recent approval to have funding, which is in addition to the normal pupil teacher ratio, I think that is also amazing. And of course, our heads of PD, there's been two of them in this whole 12, 13 years, who've just been incredibly generous, incredibly supportive, and I think gone above and beyond to create the conditions for us to try new ideas, get them going, learn from them, and improve them. So I think those are all ingredients which are needed to become a coaching school, a beacon school. And while part of me feels fear when that is raised, it's dead exciting as well. So I suppose those two, fear and excitement, always go together well.
For me, it's taking it beyond now the boundaries of the school. Well, beyond the day-to-day work. So getting parents involved, allowing teachers to understand the power of, parents to understand the power of coaching, and offering workshops for parents, how they can develop their relationships with their children at home through coaching skills. And that'd be one way, I think. And just raising that awareness that coaching's at the heart of the school to help raise the child. The second thing for me would be to keep developing the coach up. Culture that we've created out of this school, and support the schools in their journey, because all the schools have got very different models of financing and the way that they perceive coaching, the way that they receive coaching, just what coaching is. And so to support all of our colleagues who are keen to take coaching into their schools, but sometimes hit a little bit of a blockage. The blockage, as Russell's quite rightly illustrated 2-3 times, we just don't have here. We're going with the flow with our colleagues, or they're going with our flow. And the third element for me would be to work with the co-active team now here in SG to create a coaching for kids Lear curricula and take it into the classroom with the kids. So it's not just this outside train that we bring in, but for them to be one of our direct partners. I think that would really, really raise the bar. And it'd be part of that, the pastoral program, or it might underpin the entire school.
Yeah, but it's important, chaps, to have an ongoing vision about where it's going to go next. You know, that's about, you know, maintaining that momentum. And Russell, you talked about, you know, fear and excitement. The fear and excitement needs to continue. I think those are two very important parts of continuing to evolve a coaching culture in your schools. So if you think about advice for schools starting a journey, what I love about our podcast series is, you know, we're talking to people at all different parts of that journey. So, you know, there'll be listeners right now listening in going, oh my word, this is insane. Isn't this amazing what some schools are able to achieve right now and are aspiring to move on to the next level? You talked about raising the bar, Steve, in many ways. But if you're thinking about some schools who are in many ways at that starting stage, early stages, and they're wanting to sort of, okay, start the process of developing a coaching culture, where would you encourage them to start? And any thoughts or tips?
Oh gosh.
You've got to get something that is bespoke for your school. I don't think if anyone's saying this is how you put coaching into a school, whether it's a local school, international school, whatever it is, I think that is a sign that something's not quite right in their approach. So you've got to find out what would be wanted from it. Is it about raising the quality of teaching and learning? Is it about investing in staff? Is it about getting new initiatives going? Is it, there's a wealth of different approaches you could take. So what works for your school, for their needs? I think that's important. Another is really early, think about the money, think about the funding. And perhaps with the true cost of coaching, actually try and use the spreadsheet that we've created, because you can just put your own numbers in quite easily the way it's designed, and see, actually, if there was one person per year who said, yeah, I'm renewing my contract because of coaching, how much money would that save you? And is that amount of money more than the amount that we would spend on sending coaches on courses? And if so, why wouldn't you go for it? That it's, you're not going to lose anything on a financial level at all. So money, something bespoke for your school, and the internal training, I cannot emphasize enough how important that is. We send people on coaching courses. We don't run anything like that ourselves. We've got professional, very high quality, expensive courses. And when those people come back, they're not suddenly coaches. How do they become coaches? There's two things. One is the internal training that we provide, which is just a refresher of the courses we've been on. It's just a refresher of using techniques. We are refreshers. The other thing that they really helps staff members become strong coaches is coaching. It is their coachees teach them as much about coaching as they will ever learn from the course that they went to and the internal coaching training that they do with us. So it is providing a structure where people can coach 10 times in a year. Not what I've heard in some other schools who say, oh, you can have 3 or 4 coaching sessions in a year. And I think that does not build the skills of the coach or the coachee, actually, but part of what we try and emphasize is how to train the coachee to become an effective coachee. That's part of what we focus on. So there are so many different ingredients.
Explain what coaching is. Get one or two reasonable books and just start from that really, really small, tiny step. And it will gain traction. Coach each other. Just do a little bit of peer coaching. See if you can do some coaching with some friends or some colleagues. You'd have to go for the, and it'd have to be a credential coach. And if it starts to take off, you'll start to feel the momentum. And then maybe one of you guys can go on some bit of training, a weekend training course. It doesn't have to be coactive. There's hundreds of coaching credentialed or accredited ICF courses or EMCC courses you can take. Just go on one of those guys, bring it back and start seeing what's needed for your school. There's lots and lots of books out there, so much literature. Willing Hearts is the place to start for me.
So important. We would not have taken off without that, particularly in the first 2 years.
Yeah.
Strategy. I'm also a big believer that there needs to be, I don't know what level it needs to be at, probably depends on the school. It was at the level of the head of PD when we first got starting. And we basically formed two strategies that we thought would help the coaching really take off. First, quality, then quantity. So rather than try and have many people being coached, let's have a relatively small number of people who were had some awareness of coaching and willingness for coaching, these willing hearts that Steve's talked about, and focus on making the quality of those coaching interactions. And so we came up with different ways to do that. And then in addition, in parallel with the first quality, then quantity, the other strand of our strategy was low-hanging fruit. And what do we mean by that? It is, in our first round of coaching, we just wanted a small number, just 10 people from the staff to volunteer, volunteers only, and that they had some idea or understanding of what coaching was beforehand or might be. We had an orientation meeting about it, and the idea was just go with something which has been more likely to work. We had a survey which went at the end of the year to got feedback, which was just blew our mind, was beyond what we ever could have hoped for. And from those 10, the next year we offered, there were 20 people then volunteered. And it wasn't because we broadcast better or went around whipping up support in some way. What happened, I believe, is that people just quietly in the staff room drinking coffee would just share, actually, that was worthwhile. And that's what caused that. So I would say that it's really important to have a strategy, be really clear on what it is, and to have a time frame that you want to do the initial stage, and then have plans for what will happen after that if it is taking off.
I think there's a final one from me, Richard, where, and I heard this from a workshop I attended, all teachers, all educators, ostensibly coaches, it's the same thing. You're not giving advice to a little one to get them into action, to get them to move forward. You're working with them to come up with their own solution. And that's what coaching is. So it's not a massive leap. It's not a huge stretch. If you want to bring coaching into your school, just say, well, that's what we do anyway. We're just going to shift the focus on how we work with an adult on that. You've got all the tools already. And it's more than you've got the tools, you've got the intention, because that's why you became an educator.
Very helpful advice. And again, for folks who are listening, you know, the idea of you guys becoming a beacon school, flagship school, and wanting to reach out and wanting to have conversations and build a network, you know, there's perfect opportunities for folks to get in touch with you guys and to continue to ask those sorts of questions, which I think would be super helpful. Let me finish up with a final question, and I love this question. What gives you hope about the future of coaching in schools?
A hope for coaching in schools, really it's the millennials. And the millennials moving into leadership as they are at the moment. And I don't know what the exact age cutoff is, but in their 30s, I guess, as they move into their 40s, 45, and are getting into positions where they're really making decisions with budget in schools, their open-mindedness to coaching, their open-mindedness to a process where they're facilitated, not being a sign that they're deficient in some way or needing extra help, but that it's a resource to be used, I think that makes them the the generation that will really make coaching go into schools. And that's what gives me hope for coaching in schools, really.
Gentlemen, thank you both genuinely for joining me once again. It's been fascinating, as it always is, to hear how the coaching journey at SJI has continued, and I use that word, continued to evolve, and particularly how, if I can use the phrase, intentional leadership, very much on your behalf, protected time, but also a commitment to developing people, very much helping to create the conditions for coaching to flourish at SJI. I hope today's conversation has encouraged listeners, I know it will, wherever they find themselves on their coaching journey. So whether you're just beginning to explore or looking to take maybe an existing program to the next level, there's been so much wisdom and practical insight in this episode to take away. As always, a big thank you to those listening and watching. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please do share it with colleagues. And I genuinely would encourage you to reach out to both Russell and Steve at SJI if you're keen to build your coaching network. That invitation is very much there. But for now, keep coaching, keep creating the conditions for great conversations, and we will see you all next time on the Coaching and Education podcast.
Thanks so much for having us. It's been great.
See you, folks.
Thank you.
Fantastic.